Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor for the Union Tribune. Jay, I'm in Atlanta. Just spent, it seems like I say this a lot, but like I just spent a really long 3 days in Washington. It seems like that has been the season, like a long 3 days in Cincinnati, a long 3 days in Colorado. This one was certainly unique. And we have a lot to talk about today. Where do you want to start?
Well, I guess we should start by asking how you are. I know you weren't exactly in the middle of it on Saturday night, but you were there.
I watched it.
You watched it. You were high above. I felt like you were in a good, if there was a good place to be in that stadium the other night, I thought you were in one of the better places. You were at the top of the stadium behind enclosed glass and if something really awful happened, you were in a good spot. But fortunately, nothing awful happened. That's the first thing we should mention, is that nothing terrible happened. Obviously, one fan was involved in this, in the crossfire or whatever happened outside the ballpark. But whatever happened was outside the park. People inside the park were fine. But I guess, why don't you tell us what you saw from your perch high above Nationals Park?
I will say that did occur to me in the midst of kind of the chaos of 2 or 3 minutes is sometimes complain about those types of press boxes and some of the new ballparks. They're really high. But as I was watching what was happening below me in the stands, and I saw the fear and the chaos, and chaos is, you know, associated with fear in moments like that. And certainly everyone in the ballpark was wondering, were we experiencing something inside the ballpark, an incident? And I thought, I'm safe. I'm good. For a minute, all of us, everyone in the press box got down below where you were hidden, because you had heard the, semi-automatic gunfire. And then you saw, when you see thousands of people running and screaming, and it wasn't terrible screams, but it was get out. And, you know, you go, okay, well, wait, maybe I should get down. So then you saw on the field, and I will tell you, Jay, that I will never forget. And let's remember that at this moment, we thought maybe there was something going on inside the ballpark. I will never forget seeing Fernando Tatis Jr. sprint out low to the ground, down the left field track, grab two children, it looked to me to be two children, and sprint back. I will never forget it, because like I said, at that moment, didn't know if bullets were going to start flying. That's just what it was. And
do you think did he know those kids?
It was Jurickson Profar's son, and Jurickson got his son and other teammates' children. I'm not going to rain on anybody's parade here. The players didn't close the gate. The players were fine with fans coming in. The players were going to get family members of them, their own family members and their teammates' family members. So in no way am I going to diminish what the Padres did, because Fernando Tatis Jr. didn't have family there. He called it his family.
Right.
But it was his teammates' family. And I don't want to get too dramatic here, but the guy went out there during an incident like that, not knowing what was happening, in order to save what he called his family. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, it's very easy for him or anyone else who didn't have like immediate family there, or certainly kids that wouldn't, you know, would be petrified to just duck, you know, look, those guys could easily just duck back in the clubhouse.
And
be safe and realize that, hey, nothing, you know, whatever happens out there, we're going to be okay. But you're right. It says something about the people, Tatis and others who I think followed him, that, you know, that they were willing to go out there and risk and put themselves at potential risk, because at that point they didn't know what was going on. And it was potentially a risky situation. They went out there to try to save people that, you know, mean a lot to them. And I do think that, you know, deserves a lot of plaudits for them.
And it was that showed up when Jace Tingler got emotional yesterday talking before the game, that that it was to witness that, to see kind of selflessness from guys that, look, we see them as ball players. We are all guilty of that. I think fans are in particular. Well, that's what you're paying to see your ball players there.
Sure.
And then I think of them sometimes as justifiably so in many instances. You don't get to be among the best in the world without being extremely self-centered. Mm-hmm. But that was really something to see. And like I said, I won't ever – like Fernando Tatis Jr. was having an incredible night before that. he had done three or four things. You go, well, there he goes again.
Right, right.
And those are things that I consider myself fortunate to be the beat writer and that I get to witness. I won't ever forget going, and there was Fernando Tatis Jr. And I believe he didn't have shoes on. He'd already untucked his jersey. He was inside, and there he goes streaking down. And it was a chaotic scene. He mm-hmm. threw that gate open, or I should say pushed it open. Right. He grabbed kids like it was the building was on fire. Mm-hmm. So in that mm-hmm. moment, Fernando Tatis Jr. was being heroic. It Absolutely. Does not matter that the shooting was outside and there was no danger. In that moment, 30,000 people thought we were in danger.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's no. That's good. And that's the kind of thing that you like to think that everyone would do that. And to see that among sports heroes, sports people who sometimes are considered heroes for no good reason other than the fact that they, you know, they play this game really well and they do something that, you know, the rest of us can only dream about. But this was real life. And they did something that, as you said, in that moment was heroic. So that's good to hear your perspective on that. And then yesterday, you're back in the ballpark, and was it on the field before? Jace Tingler talked via Zoom,
right?
And then you're on the field before the game, and I think your story today, well, online yesterday and in the paper today, had quotes from Tatis as well as Emilio Pagan, and I think we had a picture in the paper of Emilio's wife carrying their two little girls. I think they're, you know, four, the oldest one is four, the youngest one is 9 months. And, you know, there's a look of real fear on his wife's face, as you would expect in that moment. What were those guys like 12, 14 hours later after a night of maybe some sleep, maybe not, back in the ballpark?
Emilio was shook. And mm-hmm. Fernando was Fernando. You know, yes, that's who he is. It really, there was no false bravado or anything for Fernando. It was just he talked about what happened. Will Myers is the perfect guy. And I alluded to it in my story that baseball uh-huh. players are the perfect guys to come back to the site of, something traumatic, and just play some baseball the next day, right. because that's what right. they do. You know, mm-hmm. Will talked about making adjustments from the shooting the night before. Okay, Will. But that's what Will Myers does. But just like all of us would, look, some media members were more shook up than other ones. I will tell you, it was unnerving, but you then kind of get perspective and you go, mm-hmm. okay, uh-huh. Some players were more shook up than others. Emilio Pagan's wife and two daughters were there, and they went through some things out there, you know, not knowing what was happening.
Sure.
And here's a dad stuck out in the bullpen for 5 minutes.
That's
like
right.
when I think about That's it, right. I start to to think of the terror, mm-hmm. First off, of children. Remember when you were a child and you were in a moment, you looked at your dad, right? Or you looked at your mom, like, what? You don't know what's going on, but you looked at them. And to think about that, the picture we had of Profar carrying his little boy. Uh-huh. But then to think of the terror that Emilio, when I talked to him, was still, you could tell he was still living that. So
right.
I thought of that when he came out on the field yesterday to pitch, like, mm-hmm. you know, hey, he's a big boy and he's making, you know, some good money and it's time to go. But, you know, it was still clearly on his mind.
Right. And that is something that, as you said, and it's one of those things where I joke about momentum and no momentum and all this stuff, but there really isn't momentum. And one of the reasons is because these guys are so good at putting things aside, and athletes in general, the idea that, you know, something that happened the day before is going to carry over to the next day and all this. Look, it's another game. Circumstances are totally different. And most of them are like Will Myers, where it's like, hey, we got another game to play today. You know, we got another pitcher to face. Max Scherzer's on the mound. You know, Joe Musgrove's pitching for us. We got to figure out what are we going to do? How are we going to win a game? And I think that's what these guys do a lot of. And I'm sure it's going to be the same tonight. I mean, they flew to what, you know, they flew, you know, whatever it is, 90 minutes south last night. They're in Atlanta. They may play today. The weather forecast is not good. But if they do play today, it's like, all right, we got a game to play. And it's not to lessen the seriousness of anything that happened or anybody that might have been scared, more scared than other people. But as you said, that's a lot of what these guys do. And it's how they got to this point by being the kind of people that have that's the mentality they have. They don't dwell on the stuff that a lot of us dwell on, where it's like, oh gosh, that thing that happened a couple of days ago, he must be still thinking about that. Chances are he's not.
And I play amateur psychologist a lot, being around these guys as much as I am, talking to mm-hmm. them, things that I hear and see that don't make the public, because you know they're maybe trivial or whatever. And I often go to myself, that might not, from our perspective, be the healthiest way to go about things, right, compartmentalizing right. like you guys do. But the $20 million a year you're making is because of your ability to compartmentalize.
Right,
so,
right.
Jay, you make a great point there. All right.
Let's talk some baseball, because there is more than enough baseball to talk about, even beyond what happened with the incident on Saturday. But we should start with Friday night, which was in its own way an incredible night in Washington. Where do we start? I mean, in a sense that, you know, Cronenworth got more of the headlines, I think, for hitting for the cycle, because it's something that is rarely done, and certainly rarely by the Padres. They didn't have anybody do it for 46 years, and now they've had it happen three times in seven seasons. But let's face it, that's happened three times now for the Padres. They have never scored 24 runs in a game
right.
until Friday night. So that was something that no one had seen. And in another case, probably, you know, would have gotten huge headlines just on its own. So start with Friday, which was it took like 90 minutes to play the first inning and a half, I think.
125 pitches.
It's just crazy.
Find the plate. Right,
crazy. So.
And all night, the Nationals pitchers just struggled. Give credit to the Padres, who chased like 6% of pitches right. outside the zone. Right. But many of those were uncompetitive pitches, but many were good pitches. And all weekend, the Padres had a really good sense of what was an inconsistent and small zone by all three pitchers, or by all three home plate umpires. They did absolutely fantastic, especially in the first two games. But gosh, what Tommy Pham did, it comes a triple short of the cycle, but what was he 4-for-6 with a walk, scored 5 runs.
Yeah.
It was the ultimate example of everything the Padres said they were. And look, for the last 27 games, they've been the best offense in baseball. But that game, all up and down the lineup, and they did everything right. They played good defense. And look, you start beating a team down. I mean, let's give Chris Paddock some credit for bouncing back and going 5 innings. It wasn't great, but he did it. The Washington Nationals had to sit out there for a 7-run inning, a 3-run inning, a 6-run inning.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Look, that there, you just don't – I was talking to some guys. You just don't come back from that. Like, whatever. That was such an anomaly. I thought it was impressive what they did the next day, actually the next 2 days, in the game that was Saturday and Sunday, scoring 10 runs, scoring in multiple innings, guys continuing to have those approaches at the plate. The offense is all that was advertised for most of the last month.
Well, and I mean, let's face it, it's one of those things. They scored, you can look at it a couple different ways. They scored 41 runs in 3 games. Okay, you would think you're going to win all 3 games, but they also gave up 20 in 3 games. So you're also thinking, well, maybe you're lucky to win 2 out of 3 if you're giving up 20 runs. I mean, there were 2 games where they gave up 8 runs. And yeah, some of it was when it wasn't competitive, but most of it was when it was. I mean, take away the one bad inning by Miguel Diaz, you know, if you want. But, you know, Paddock struggled again early in that game. And yes, he did get the ship righted, but it helped that he had a 10-3 lead, obviously. But he was not good early. And, you know, on Saturday, it was another Blake Snell adventure. on the mound. But we'll get back to the pitching in a minute. But I do want to – we should talk a little bit more about the hitting. The funny thing is, like, one of the guys who had – Tatis and Machado only had one hit each on Friday night. The Padres had 22 hits, and their two best players each had one. So, you know,
Cronenworth had four. Yeah.
Right, Pham had four. Myers was 3 for 6 and drove in 7 runs. And he's like, oh, yeah, Will Myers drove in 7 runs in this game. You know, so that was an insane night. And, you know, from so many different standpoints, and good for Jake Cronenworth, you know, hitting for the cycle. And although that double's still a little, you know, you could argue the double, but I guess the guy did slip. And so you can't really – yeah, I can't really give him that, but it was early. It was early in the game, so it wasn't like the score was doing him a favor or anything like that. I mean, that was not something where, oh, he needs a double for the cycle, so we'll give him a double.
Waiting. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. It ended up being a 24-8 game, but it does. Early on, you're thinking, oh, that's definitely going to New York. The Nationals are going to send that play because they don't want their guy to get an earned run or whatever.
Right, right.
And then it's like, there's no way the Nationals are going to do that now. But, oh, my gosh. Oh, we're taking back the cycle. Okay?
That's right. That's right.
Because that was not a big league double. But, hey, it doesn't matter. But Jake Cronenworth had a heck of a night. And Jake Cronenworth continues to have a heck of a year. It's one of the more impressive years in the majors this year. And maybe I'm coming from a place of, it's Jake Cronenworth. It's not Fernando Tatis Jr. But defensively at multiple positions, he does something not every night, but every series. He's consistent. And then at the plate, he doesn't slump, and he goes about it in a way that is just brilliant to watch. He is not Fernando Tatis Jr. He is not Ronald Acuna. He is not Vlad. He's a guy who is extremely talented, but like he just does it. It's really cool.
Well, and look, let's not underestimate. You know, there are people who look at Jake Cronenworth and say, oh, well, yeah, you know, he works hard and he does this, he does that. Jake Cronenworth is a fantastic athlete.
Amazing.
You know, don't let the way that he looks, you know, fool you in any way, because he doesn't fit the stereotype of a guy who you say is athletic. But Jake Cronenworth is really a great athlete. And we know that from the standpoint of not just his baseball, but look what he did in hockey. This was a guy who might have been able to go on and play, certainly, you know, college hockey, and maybe he could have played hockey and he could have played professionally.
He's an extra base machine too.
Yeah. Like, and he is strong and he's fast, and he has turned into a guy. And there is no way that these guys knew that Jake Cronenworth was going to turn into this when they got him. But it's funny that, and I'll segue into the pitching with this, that trade right now looks so good. Tommy Pham, especially the way Tommy Pham has been in recent months, Tommy Pham and Jake Cronenworth, that is a phenomenal trade. The next trade that AJ Preller made with Tampa Bay is not looking so phenomenal. And Blake Snell continues to struggle throwing strikes. And it's one of those things, I don't know. I think I texted you, and I don't know if it was Saturday night's game or yesterday's game. And it might have been yesterday after Musgrove got lit up in that one inning. Just how many pitchers can the Padres trade for at the deadline? And the obvious answer is they can't trade for a lot. You cannot remake your roster, you know, at the trade deadline. And the Padres are just going to need, if this team is going to do what they hoped it was going to do, it's not going to come because they trade for five pitchers, at least I don't think it is, because they trade for five pitchers at the deadline. It's going to come because guys like Snell and Musgrove and Paddock all pitch better and pitch the way that this organization believes that they are good enough. And right now we're not seeing that from any of those guys.
No, I thought it was very, very interesting with the tone of a father, you know, that is wants to push his adolescent son a little bit, but also is being, you know, is also being loving. The way that Jace Tingler said yesterday when I asked him, because it felt weird. It was like 48 hours earlier or 24 hours earlier after Blake Snell looked like he was not going to survive the third inning, right?
Right.
He threw, I think, 11 strikes, 26 pitches. He allowed 3 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks. And they sent him back out for the fourth. Mm-hmm. And it was 5-4. And I thought that was really interesting. And he ended up getting through it in 11 pitches, got a double play. He faced Alcides Escobar, Trey Turner, and Juan Soto. And I asked why. And it was, we had to push him. He's got to push himself. He's got to be better. It's like, yeah, he does. Jay, you nailed it. They might get a pitcher. They might get two pitchers. They still need guys on their staff to pitch better. I don't believe they're this bad. I mean, the almost six ERA that this staff has over the past month, the starting rotation has over the past month, I don't believe it. But there's some adjustments being made with how you hold on to the ball. There's some, you know, Blake Snell is like that thing he does with his helmet. That's the perfect Blake Snell photo right now. Like, I mean, like he doesn't know what's happening out there. And I just, got to be better. I feel bad asking Jay Stingler to talk about it because I'm sitting here going, yeah, just got to be better. How long have we been talking about it?
Yeah. Right. And you talk about Musgrove where I think actually you could probably talk about all three of those guys that we mentioned are all basically in the same spot in a way to me is that they have innings where they look fantastic. They look like the pitchers that you think that they are. And then, but it seems like they cannot avoid the one big inning. And it happened to Musgrove yesterday. Four or five, 2-out hits to bring in those four runs in that inning, you know, and otherwise he pitched okay. He got a little lucky. I thought in the fifth inning with that smoked line drive that turned into a double play.
Oh, who caught that?
Exactly. And I thought that was the time to get him out. I actually wondered the other night after you say they pushed Snell to the fourth inning, I actually wondered if – I was a little surprised he didn't come out for the fifth. He was at 74 pitches, I believe it was. He had just had a good inning. And I kind of wondered a little bit, and I don't know if it was just – maybe Tingler had it in the back of his head. This guy just had a good inning. It's like, you know, I went to the driving range today, and it was mostly a terrible experience. And like the second to last ball that was in the little tray there probably was the best shot I hit. And I should have just walked away at that point. And I was like, no, I got one more here. I'm going to repeat that. And instead I hit this crappy shot and I walked away upset. And as you can tell, I haven't gotten over it, but I wonder if Tingler was in that position the other night where it's kind of like, you know, he just had a good inning. It's kind of borderline whether he could go out there for another one. Let's get him out of there. And maybe he can feel good about the way that he finished this performance. And when he works on his bullpen, and the next time he can sort of, you know, take that and build on it the next time. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it goes back to that whole fatherly thing, like having him, you know, push him. But you know what? We're going to, you know, I think you're exactly right. Plus, they were in a situation with the bullpen that they were able to, you know, on Saturday and Sunday, use the bullpen to get through help there. I don't know what sort of situation they're in now, especially considering you got Darvish going tonight and he's supposedly back to good health. And so, okay, I think we're all still willing to believe that you can go in expecting you Darvish to give you six innings. I don't think we're just because of these last couple outings thinking that's not something you Darvish is anymore.
Right.
Man, they got problems if we're suddenly start talking about who's your number one starter. But after that, I think Reese Kinnear tomorrow. So, okay, we're looking at another four-inning game. You know, nothing against Reese Kinnear, but, I mean, okay, bringing him up.
Right.
And back then, I'm assuming back to Paddock on Wednesday. I think it's virtually certain that Ryan Weathers pitches over the weekend in Miami. Ryan Weathers comes back as your most dependable starter. If Yu Darvish does not do what we expect Yu Darvish to do tonight, Ryan Weathers is your guy right now.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens tonight or tomorrow or whenever. I mean, they could be in a situation where they're playing a couple of 7-inning games
next day or two. They'll be fine, maybe. Maybe Reese Kinnear doesn't come up if they go that.
Right. So it changes the situation, although they still would need somebody tomorrow. If the doubleheader is Tuesday.
And they have 27 players and they'd bring someone. Yeah,
that's true. Then they can bring them up. If the doubleheader is Wednesday, you'd have two starters or, you know, you'd have a starter and you could use a bullpen game or whatever.
But I mean,
there's a lot of different options depending on what happens with the weather and with Yu Darvish and all of that. So,
it is supposed to rain all day tomorrow as well. So that Wednesday thing is a possibility. But personally speaking, I'll be stuck in Atlanta again with the rain and the shootings. And the I keep getting stuck in these cities. And I just can't explain how much that complicates a trip. All right, enough
about me. You're right there.
It's really like this season, Jay, has been incredible. The players are – no one wanted to minimize what happened outside the ballpark. But it was like, this is absolutely incredible what keeps happening to the Padres. First off, they go to the park knowing they're playing for 3.5 hours. It's even starting to get to them. They're like, you know, like, talking to Eric Hosmer the other day. He's all, you know, we're really good, all this. You're going to have to invest some time to watch us, but we're going to give you something to talk about.
Well, and then the other thing to talk about is the bullpen. You know, Emilio Pagan yesterday, I hesitate to be too critical because he struck out Juan Soto. That pitch, and it showed again on the umpire scorecard thing that I retweeted, and Juan Soto was struck out, and Chris Siegel blew the call, and you cannot have an umpire blow a call at that moment, but he did, and the next pitch wasn't terrible, but Juan Soto's really good, and he hit the ball just far enough to left field. But, you know, maybe Pagan gets out of that inning if he's got Soto out of the way. But I said on here, you know, the other issue is Melanson, and I tweeted at the time, because I wasn't going to second guess this, I first guessed it, and I said whether this works or not, because they had shown on TV that both Melanson and Camarena were warming in the bullpen. I don't know who else was available because, you know, guys like Adams and Hill had pitched already in the morning or early afternoon or whatever you want to call it. So we have no idea of knowing who's available. But if the choices were Camarena or Melanson in the ninth inning, I thought Melanson was the way to go because you didn't want to do what Dave Martinez did here a week or so ago when he left Brad Hand in the bullpen and put a guy out there who wasn't as good, and the Padres ended up walking it off. Well, this time, Tingler went to his closer, and I said, you don't want to get beat with your best pitcher in the bullpen, and this guy said, he's not their best pitcher. And I said, well, he's their closer, so they must think he's their best reliever. Now, whether he is or not, I don't know. It might be Pagan, it might be – maybe it's Pomerantz, but at this moment, Mark Melanson's the guy that they trust more than anyone else. I thought he should have been out there, but – and I'll finally get to my point here – I said before the break, we talked on this podcast about if you're in October and you have a one-run lead in the ninth inning of a huge game, how confident are you that Mark Melanson's going to close the deal? And I said I wasn't terribly confident. I'm not sure where you came down on it, but yesterday did nothing to change that opinion, which is that Mark Melanson's been walking a tightrope for quite a while here, I think, over the past several weeks. And most of the time he's gotten away with it. But I still think, and I don't know the answer, it's not like you can go get a closer, you know, off the tree in the backyard or anything. But I still think that's something that's going to be an issue going forward. It's not like he's going to go out there and blow every game or anything like that. But it's always going to be in the back of your mind. He's not a strikeout guy that got, you know, he's around the edges. People don't seem to be chasing some of those pitches as much. Still think that could be an issue.
That's something, Jay, that some of those pitches that were getting people where he was dominant. He was automatic for 25 saves or whatever.
Yes.
And he didn't save all those because he had those extra inning games. But that's the thing, is they're laying off the cutter. They're laying off the curve in particular, I believe. That's when I notice. So yes, Jay, he's walking a tightrope. Since you said that, he's also saved a few games in tight situations.
Yep.
So I think we have a ways to go. It is monstrous. I'll write about it today, I think. I meant to write about it over the weekend after talking with him and other people, but then some stuff happened. Drew Pomerantz, being healthy, because it is true. He's one of the best relievers in baseball since the middle of 2019 when he's on the field. So it's huge. Emilio Pagan flashes this year. Now, he's like the high leverage Craig Stammen. Okay. Emilio Pagan has come in and had some absolutely magnificent outings, and he's done it against the top of orders. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whereas they have been pretty strict about, I say pretty, I think it's entirely strict about Mark Melancon in the ninth inning, save situations other than yesterday. Emilio Pagan has come in to face the top of the order, and that's right. Big. So they have other options. I don't think there's any indication that they're going away from Mark Melancon at this point.
No, and I don't think
he's a crafty old dude too. Yeah. So I'm not entirely with you, though. I am acknowledging that the things that you're seeing are absolutely correct.
Yeah. And I do think Pomerantz could be the answer. The mm-hmm. one thing that I think you have to be careful with Pomerantz is, do you want to pitch him on back-to-back days? I mean, because of the, you know, he's already been on the injured list twice. To me, it seems like, especially now, I would be more careful with him try not to go with him on back-to-back days. But, you know, if you can keep him healthy, he has the potential to be a closer if it comes to that. And I'm not saying it's come to that yet, but that is an option, you know, going forward.
If, they don't even have to tell us about it, right? Like, it's like they can be like, we felt it was best to use Mark against these guys and Drew against these guys. Yeah. And, you know, and that's how a lot of really good teams do it. And the truth is, yesterday, Jace did show that flexibility. But the truth is, Jace Tingler has used his pitchers in different situations mm-hmm. like that. So it really wouldn't be that unusual, except for the fact that Mark Melancon went to the All-Star game and leads the majors in saves.
Right. All right. Well, you are in Atlanta, assuming they're going to play at some point. The Braves have lost their best player for the season, Ronald Acuna Jr. They are 45 and 47 at this moment. They are only four games behind the Mets, though. In the NL East, they just traded for Jock Peterson. They traded for Stephen Vogt. Padres have not seen the Braves in 2 years. I think you said this is. Yeah. Is it in your newsletter that Tatis will be playing in this ballpark for the first? It's the one ballpark he hasn't played in.
The one National League ballpark
that he, you know, that he hasn't played. Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, you know, those guys are dangerous. Austin Riley, I'm just looking at Jeff Sanders' on deck thing, which will be online here. Austin Riley has 15 homers. Dansby Swanson has 16. Will Smith is a good closer in a mostly bad bullpen. And the starters are kind of up in the air. Kyle Muller making just his fourth start. Tuki Toussaint has yet to pitch this season. And then Charlie Morton on Wednesday. We know all about Charlie Morton. Has been around a long time and is a really good pitcher. So that's what we're looking at going forward. And hopefully the Padres can get these three games in, because this is their only trip to Atlanta. So even if it means a long night, one of these nights, and a doubleheader on Wednesday before going to Miami, whatever it works out to, hopefully the games get in and we will.
The Padres.
And hopefully you get to Miami.
The Padres in particular would prefer that, because as of now, as we've talked about, after this trip, they go to Denver once and then do not leave the Pacific. Or no, they go to St. Louis, but they do not leave. There is not, I believe, an off day around that trip to St. Louis. I know it's not before, because I have a red eye to get to St. Louis, but so it would be, what I'm saying is, it would be tough to come back to Atlanta. And there's an off day after St. Louis, I guess.
After St. Louis.
Yeah. So,
but we don't know what Atlanta's schedule. I don't have Atlanta's schedule.
I haven't looked at that. So, and look, a lot of times, look, they find a way to play here. But man, there have been a lot of rainouts in the East and the South over the past couple weeks with all the weather. So here we go.
All right. Good luck. We'll talk to everyone on Thursday.
Thanks, everybody.